Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
My special guest tonight is a man who presides over a $407 billion economy. He dwells in a brutal bear pit, though at one defining time in his life, his every intention was to be a church minister. There'd be few places he'd probably rather be than out the back of a line of breakers surfing at Australia's iconic Manly Beach. And of his current vocation, he declared in his maiden parliamentary speech, "My faith will ground me, shape me, and provide motivation for me to serve." This fascinating mix of a man is the New South Wales State Treasurer, Mike Baird, who joins us on Open House. Mike, thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Lee.
You're actually sporting a surfing injury, I'm told.
Yes, I'm not as young as I used to be, Lee. It was a rock hop. For those that know surfing, a rock hop has always got elements of risk.
Yes.
But experience is supposed to take you to the point where you minimise those risks. Unfortunately, I got it horribly wrong.
Well, I'm all the more so grateful for you joining us injured. Mike, when you look back on the last couple of decades, you've been a banker, theological student, as I said, a wannabe church minister. Do you sometimes pinch yourself right now and think, how'd I get here?
Oh, I think you always do, Lee. I mean, life moves at a rapid pace, and I think whatever job you find yourself, whatever vocation you find yourself, I think there are many days where you're just thinking, how did that all happen and how have I ended up in this particular role at this particular time? But I think that the one thing that drives all of us is that at that day you don't want to look back with any regrets. Whatever stage of your life you get to, you just don't want to look back with regrets at some of the experiences you've had and the opportunities you do have currently before you, both today and going forward.
Are there days in your current job, and I cannot begin to understand the kind of pressure cooker that your head becomes when you think, how did I get here? Why am I doing this? You still got that determination that this is the right place to be.
Oh, there's no doubt. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind that this is the spot that many years before have prepared me for. I feel very, very comfortable in that. But I wouldn't be telling the truth if I didn't say that there were moments where I thought, can I be doing anything else?
I quite understand. You had every chance to know what politics is really like with your dad, Bruce. Bruce, a former Transport and Olympic Minister in New South Wales, federal MP during the Howard years. How did you view the business of politics as you looked on from within the family at that time?
Yeah, within a family context, it's probably one of the reasons I was so determined to do something else. I think every son feels that, yes. That you know, you want to create your own identity, make your own mark and impact. And so for many, many years, I ran a million miles. And, you know, as I observed it, I remember being incredibly proud, you know, proud of my father and the contribution he was making. And at the same time, you know, you did feel the impacts. I mean, he was taken away a lot of time under stress on a regular basis. There was almost this sense of admiration from afar for what he was doing and how he was doing it. Personally, you know, that meant, well, that was for him. There must be something else for me. And, you know, which is why I charged off into the world of banking, and it's a very different world.
Yes.
The world of finance and politics, and yeah, and that's a big reason that for many years I did my own thing.
Everything's different from politics. So you had this successful, lucrative career in banking. Then in the middle of that, you took a year off to study theology at Regent College in Canada, much to the surprise, even amusement of some of your colleagues.
They did. It was a very funny day at Deutsche Bank when there was a hook-up between Melbourne and Sydney with the team I was working with, and it was announced that I was heading off to Theological College. It was a very unusual moment. There was no fees that came with that decision.
What did they say to you? Were they surprised? Were they affirming? Appalled? Puzzled?
I think all of the above, but overwhelmingly, I was incredibly taken back by actually how supportive they were, and not many of the people I work with at Deutsche Bank were Christians, but they were certainly appreciative of someone that was prepared to do something they believed in, and I think they respected that. And indeed, it was an incredible act of generosity because as I walked out the door, my boss at the time, you know, handed me a check which paid for the whole year's tuition. You know, so I couldn't have been more grateful for the support and encouragement I received from them. And then indeed, as time went on, I actually ended up going back to join them. So
yes, tell us what that I imagine quite intoxicating year away from everything, away from the bank, away from Australia, with your family overseas, and immersed in lots of big stuff. What was that like for you?
Oh, I think my wife and I will reflect on that as the best year of our life. It was a chance. I mean, obviously, my wife is a keen Christian as well, and yeah, this is a journey that we're joined on. I mean, we've been married for 23 years, and you know, I do say it gets better and better. And there is a sense that year was very foundational for us. It was a chance to step out of life and to step into a time of reflection and prayer and reading and studying. And it was incredible, beautiful surrounds, fantastic community, fantastic teachers. And in a very real way, our life has changed forever. And it was really about, you know, resolving an issue which we both had, and that was to be Christian is one thing, but how do you live that out? How do you faithfully live out that faith in the world today and make a contribution? And in the finance world, I did wrestle with it and I struggled with it, which is why I came to the conclusion, I think the only way that you can really make a difference was to become a church minister, which is where this path took me. But as we spent time at Regent talking and reading and praying and living in that community, it was clear there are so many ways you can make a difference with your faith in the world, and every job has a capacity to do that. And as that thinking filled me and enthralled me, it then became apparent, well, actually, you know, maybe politics is a way I could make that contribution.
Yes. We attempted to stay for a little longer.
Oh, we very much so.
I wouldn't be surprised if you were.
No, very much so. I mean, we were thinking about you know, staying for an extra year, but ultimately the almost the shape of our life had been set. You know, at that point, once we made that decision, well, actually, we think that the way that everything lines up for us with the skills and the talents and the passions we have, it may actually, funnily enough, be in politics. And notwithstanding, I'd run for that for many years.
Yes. Can I ask you about a so-called life paper that you wrote during the time there, and what you said in that life paper and the comment of one of your lecturers? It's an interesting story.
Yeah, so that when you arrive there, that they ask you to write a paper reflecting on your life and your faith and your passions and where you want to go. And I was very clear in that. You know, I went through my life and family and experiences and mapped out, you know, what I thought was a future, and that was sort of heading off to make a difference in the world as a church minister. Mm-hmm. And the lecturer at the time, a guy called Lauren Wilkinson, who some of your listeners will be familiar with, is an incredible man, but in his closing comments, right down next to that line where I said I'll float off and make a difference in the world as a church minister, he put underneath in red pen, or maybe in Australian politics, and that was the start of the process for me. Well, is, you know, maybe that is something that I should consider.
And notwithstanding all of what you'd seen through your family life, that I would imagine would turn you against politics, and as you said, run 1,000 miles away.
Yeah, no, very much. And you know, it's not for the faint-hearted. The costs are significant, and I'd seen that from the inside. So it was something, you know, almost like a Jonah, yes. You know, like running in a different direction and ultimately drawn back to say, no, this is the path I have for you.
So were you determined to undertake that course when you came back from Canada, or was it something that percolated even further?
No, it was clear. My mind was to come back, to get involved. That was the long-term plan.
Okay. Apart from that, can I take you also back to one very significant moment in your family's, in your immediate family's life, to the birth of your daughter, Kate? Mm. Take us through what happened there.
Yeah, well, you know, all types of elements at the birth of all of your children. If you're fortunate enough to have kids, Eugene Peterson, when I was at Regent, described that as the most wonderful creation moment you can imagine.
Yeah.
And it is, because you know you're part of that. I mean, you've somehow majestically created a human being, you know, with fingers and
miracle
and you know, little eyes, and you know, it's just this miraculous moment. And so every birth was, and Kate, who was our second, came out. There was a struggle. I mean, as every birth is, but after the birth, about 40 minutes. It was a bit unusual. Karen had this postpartum hemorrhage, and you know, that was, the doctor had been and gone, and we were just in the room with two midwives, and it was bleeding profusely, and Karen went from, we were sitting there having dinner, we were sitting there talking about it, and she didn't look 100% right, but was still engaging normally, and she went from that to being unconscious in about, I don't know, 2 minutes, 2 or 3 minutes.
Wow.
So it was terrifying. So I had this moment where I held Kate in one hand and, you know, looking at this beautiful baby girl, and then watching my wife kind of disappear before my eyes.
What was going through your mind then?
Oh, well, everything, you know, everything. And, you know, I mean, I mentioned in my maiden speech that I'll be forever be indebted to those two midwives, because they, you know, I mean, they saved her life.
And it really was very serious, wasn't
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah. Yes. No, they saved her life. I mean, she was, you know, minutes away, I think, from not being with us. And, you know, you will never forget that moment. And it's twofold. I mean, it's risky, how risky birth is.
Yes.
So the value you place on a healthy, beautiful bub. But then, you know, don't forget what other treasures you have. And, you know, my wife's certainly one of those.
In the panic of it, I can only begin to imagine the fervency of prayers that were going up.
Yeah, I mean, it was. There's a point of helplessness. There is nowhere to turn, you know, in that moment, but, you know, to above. So there was... There was prayer, and there was panic.
So you've been in the job of New South Wales Treasurer for about 4 or 5 months since the defeat of the Keneally government in New South Wales. I'm wondering what the kinds of things you've learnt are about government and power in that time. So you can look on from within the family, you can look on even from the opposition benches, but there's nothing like it until you get there. What have you learnt about it since then?
I think I've learnt that, you know, the more you know, the more difficult it is. And, you know, every single function that or problem that you are presented has multiple impacts. So nothing is in isolation. And I think that, you know, notwithstanding the opportunities that you strive for, and, you know, to be in government, to have the opportunity to make decisions and influence the lives across the state is such a fantastic opportunity. But there is no doubt that to achieve what you need to achieve, you have to make some very, very tough decisions. Mm. And the quantum and the size of those tough decisions are probably the things that I've learned in that 100 days. You know, to get the budget into a position where we can improve services, we can build the infrastructure, and just as importantly, you know, look after those most vulnerable. I mean, there is a responsibility for government in that. There are some really tough decisions, and it's not something that you go into to win friends, because I have no doubt that over the next few months I will lose many friends or groups that think I'm being particularly harsh and not fair. But, you know, if you believe in getting this state back on a basis where you can deliver across all of those things, improving services, building infrastructure, and looking after the most vulnerable, to do that, we did need to do some tough things.
It's so often the lot of treasurers. It's very rare, other than, say, Paul Keating, it's very rare for them to, you know, seamlessly step into leadership. They often pay a very heavy political price.
Yeah, and I expect that. I expect that. And, you know, it's not something you take lightly. And, you know, there's been a couple of events where, you know, the media comments you get used to, you know, the positive and the negative,
yep.
you're used to, because one day it'll be up and the next day it'll be down. And indeed, just before I came in for this interview, there's, you know, my local papers give me a hard time on a particular issue. That's just going to happen. That's just part of the job.
Yes.
But, you know, where it really does start to cut deeply is when there are personal interactions. So long-standing friends or groups that you are close to that can all of a sudden turn aside years of friendship and personal relationship to their issue, you know, to something the government's doing that's aggrieving them.
That surprised you?
That has.
With friends?
Yes. With friends. And I didn't expect that because, you always think whatever you're doing, if someone's working for BHP or Woolworths or your local school or wherever they are, and you're potentially, whether you've got shares or your children at the schools or they're part of this sports team and, you know, your son or daughter's not getting enough game time, you know, if there are friends involved, you know, they're friends first and foremost.
You'd hope so.
Yeah. And I think that's well been, you know, probably the toughest learning for me in this, that there'll be times when people so deeply disappoint you by their personal actions.
Mm-hmm. It's often said that politics is the art of compromise. You don't always get what you want. How have you fared in that kind of world? I know especially the nature of the brutal bear pit of the New South Wales Parliament. How tough and challenging can the compromise be to you?
I think that the compromise is inevitable. And, you know, particularly when you're making tough decisions, my negotiating style in a business context always was collaborative. You know, don't let perfect get in the way of good. You know, if there's a potential smaller win for everyone as opposed to the huge win, then that's what you go for. And I think that is something that I would be continuing to aim for, you know.
Okay. We're with the New South Wales Treasurer, Mike Baird, on Open House. Mike, I know very well the high price that spouses and children of politicians play in politics, and you would have been better informed about this than anybody else. How's it been over these past few months for your family? How's it been for you?
Well, I think, Lee, I wouldn't be telling the truth if I didn't sort of 100% agree with you on how tough that is. There is this real personal mourning that comes with the job, and you hear about politicians leaving and wanting to spend more time.
Heard it so many times
with their families, and everyone's eyes roll over.
Yep.
But I can tell you,
and their eyes tear up.
Yep. And you know, it is any time my request and almost imploring your listeners, any time you hear a politician do that, whatever, whether they be Greens, Independents,
yes,
Labor, Liberal, it doesn't matter. If a politician says that, if someone dropped them a line and said, thank you for what you've done, I haven't agreed with everything you've done, but I know you've made a contribution, and they want to spend time with their family, then they do. And the cost is significant. And the mourning is, you know, my relationship with my kids will be less developed and less directly influential in each of their lives than it would be otherwise. And you cannot help but mourn that. Mm-hmm. Having said that, lived through it, personally, as a child with a father in, I don't regret that for a second. You know, I'm incredibly proud of what my father did and some of the stands he took. And, you know, I hope that my kids reflect likewise.
I'm sure they will be. I must put my journalistic hat on for a tick and ask you a couple of very specific questions. Very soon after you won the election, there was a story within just a couple of weeks that was doing the rounds that you may actually leave Parliament as early as the next election. Was that true, or where did that come from?
That came from the, you know, kind of ongoing speculation. And there is this sort of intent. Anyone in politics must want to lead and be leader. And, you know, if you're in state politics, when are you going to go to federal? And, you know, if you're...
Do you want the leadership? Which was my next question.
Yeah, yes. and that's just part of the rounds. And, my response to the media question was taken a little bit out of the context, in the sense of, listen, I want to be in here. I want to be the best treasurer I can. And I'm looking in the eye and saying, that is my ambition and that's my desire and my goal. If I can get in and be the best treasurer that the state's had, I can actually get the budget back under control. I can help to improve services with my colleagues. help to improve and build the infrastructure again with my colleagues and look after those most vulnerable, then I have actually done my job, and I can think of no better thing to walk away. I do not have that long-term ambition to have to be the leading job in the state or the leading job in the country. I am incredibly satisfied and privileged with it. This opportunity is so humbling. I mean, to when you go back to be a member of Parliament, I remember standing there before I walked into Parliament, and the hairs on the back of my neck stood up.
I'm sure.
Because I thought, I'm about to walk in and represent 60,000 people. You know, what a privilege and what an honour. And that never leaves. And on top of that, I've now been asked to be Treasurer of the State. That's incredible. I mean, that is such an honour. And my response to the journalist who was, you know, pushing on, you must want to do further, I said, listen, I'd be happy to leave in 4 years if I did a great job as Treasurer. I'd be happy to leave in 8 years. So it's more, you know, I'm here for as long as I can make a contribution. I want to be Treasurer of the State. I think to do the job, I would need at least 2 terms to do that. But my desire in this is to look after my community, to make a contribution to the state. It's not about fulfilling some personal ambitions.
You've often, as we've just alluded to, been named as a future leader of the Liberal Party in New South Wales. Do you have the leadership baton in your knapsack?
Well, I think I just answered that, didn't I? I mean, it's not, you know,
because they say everybody does.
Yeah, and I don't believe that. Yes, you know, there are naturally leaders in a parliament. You know, to get to a position to put yourself through that process, there are naturally leaders in that parliament. And sure, I imagine that people would think about what it might be to lead an opposition or to be premier of the state. But I can honestly say that, you know, back from 96 when I ran, I thought it'd be incredible to be the member for Manly, which is my community, which I'd grown to love.
One of the greatest places in the world.
Greatest place, exactly. Yep. Well said.
Notwithstanding the rocks.
And then I said, you know, if I got a portfolio to be Treasurer. I mean, I am, in many respects, notwithstanding how tough it is and the personal costs that come with it, I am living the dream. You know, in terms of I have the dream jobs, and that is my passion.
Even though just after the election there was a great deal of attention and speculation put to this, there were numbers of significant roles within your Treasury taken away from you. What was all that about?
Yeah, I mean, that, and again, that was, you know, a reflection on a small change that was blown up into a much, much bigger issue than it ever was. The concept was simple, and that was that within a Treasury context, to maintain the policy and the economic responsibility, within the finance context, to give them some more responsibility for the administration, but to collectively work together, to have two sets of eyes, rather than one sort of focusing in on some of the budget challenges we have and the economic challenge we have. And that was the plan. Now, that was taken another way, but the truth of the matter is that I remain very happy in the role and the responsibilities that I've got.
And still busy enough.
Absolutely.
Can I wrap up our conversation by asking you about three people who inspire you, and why them, and what about them?
When I was running for Parliament, the discussion I had with friends is, you know, how do you get to a position that you introduce yourself when a lot of the people, you know, in the community don't know you? They're, obviously, you've got your friends and your community groups. But how do you introduce yourself? So this group of friends came up with these words, and that was, if you run on who you are, then, you know, people will, you know, what they get is what they see is what they'll get. And so rather than a cute slogan, it was integrity, passion, and results. And encapsulating that, you know, there was someone on the team who said, what you should do if you get in, you should think of the three people that best represent those characteristics that you have, and never forget who they are and use them as inspiration for what you do should you get there. So the integrity was William Wilberforce. Yes. And, you know, the thing is, he is, you know, probably overused in many respects, but incredibly inspirational. I mean, his day in, day out focus and opportunity was about, you know, ending that slave trade.
That was costly too.
And it was, and if you watch the movie, when you see him at the end of it, it's, yes. I mean, his life was given for that cause.
Yes.
So that's inspiring. The passion, I mean, obviously came through Martin Luther, And, you know, you can't think of anyone more passionate about a cause, and the speeches he gave, and the just basically the vision, and the presence and the passion he gave to their fight. So he's chosen there, and certainly someone I aspire to follow in terms of the energy which he takes to every task, to his particular task, and I want to take it to all of mine. And then results. I think, well, who is a famous local who made it achieve results for Manly, state and country, and Sir Roden Cutler is a Manly boy that did incredible things. And like many people wouldn't know that there was one day down at Manly where there were two sharks circling someone, and you know, he jumped in as a brazen young lad and went and saved someone. Yeah, which reflected his later years when he went and took on the enemy in battlefields, and you know, paid a price, but been an incredible man. So all three of those shaped me, and my hope is in some way, shape or form I can take a little bit of each of them into this role.
We'll be watching with great interest. Mike Baird, I've thoroughly enjoyed our chat, which is hardly surprising for me. Thank you so much for joining us on Open House.
Thanks, Lee. Appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.